your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got a hellacious week going here. And these things are just, these scandals are breaking left and right. The latest one is this Comey announcement that there's new evidence and some new discovery of emails that could relate back to the original Hillary Clinton email investigation. So we're looking into that right now. What I'm going to read you first here is the actual letter of James Comey to Congress. And here's what he said. Dear Messrs. And Chairman, in previous congressional testimony, I referred to the fact that the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, had completed its investigation of former Secretary Clinton's personal email server. Due to recent developments, I am writing to supplement my previous testimony. In connection with an unrelated case, the FBI has learned of the existence of emails that appear to be pertinent to the investigation. I am writing to inform you that the investigative team briefed me on this yesterday, and I agree that the FBI should take appropriate investigative steps designed to allow investigators to review these emails to determine whether they contain classified information as well as to assess their importance to our investigation. Although the FBI cannot yet assess whether or not this material may be significant, and I cannot predict how long it will take us to complete this additional work, I believe it is important to update your committees about our efforts in light of my previous testimony. Sincerely yours, John B. Comey, Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Well, now that's saying quite a bit. What this did was set into motion just a scandalous appraisal of a reappraisal, I should say, of what happened, and we had already thought that Comey had put to rest, and with Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, any further investigative activities into Hillary Clinton's emails. But we think that this may be through Huma, okay, Abedin, and her soon husband, not to be, I guess, Anthony Weiner. Because I believe there's been a new investigation opened up about some kind of sex texting that he was involved in with a young lady, a 15-year-old. And I believe that this is opening up then, I believe, Huma's notebook computer or laptop computer, whatever it may be. So the FBI went in and seized that and started investigating and looking in to those particular emails, and they're saying that there may be classified information on that. So this thing is just exploding left and right. And I'll play you a clip of Hillary Clinton's response in just a moment. But first, I want to play a couple of clips from Fox News Network, from the O'Reilly, and also an interview from his program of very good insights into possibly where we might be headed in this investigation. First, let's a couple of clips. One, O'Reilly, and then one, Carl Bernstein, is interviewed. And the Carl Bernstein thing is very insightful also. He's saying that they're scuttlebutt in Washington, D.C. You know how these guys that are part of the establishment, they get all rumors from their buddies, the good old buddy system, the good old boy system, see, has rumors out that there's something major behind this announcement or this letter, you could say, by James Comey to the congressional investigators of several aspects of Hillary Clinton's emails. So I'm going to play you first a clip from the O'Reilly program, and then the second one is Carl Bernstein's comments. But listen very closely to these. These are very, very insightful comments.
You have a series of events, and it is circumstantial evidence, but so much circumstantial evidence, that Comey did not want to make this indictment. But the big smoking gun is that Comey did not call for a grand jury. I have spoken to dozens of FBI agents, both retired and in the service now. To a man, they say, that is extremely unusual in a complicated case like this. So now what you have is you have a political portion of this today, and then you have a legal portion. Let's take the politics first, Eric. If you look at the new Fox News poll, the enthusiasm deficit between Trump and Clinton is about 8%, 7%. That means that 7% of Trump supporters are more enthusiastic to vote than Hillary Clinton. Keep that in mind. Anything like this erodes enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton. All right, now our hardcore people are going to vote for her, but we're talking independents and we're talking Democrats who don't particularly like or trust her. So that enthusiasm level drops, and what happens then? Lower turnout. All right? So that's what happened today politically. So Trump seizes upon this, and if he doesn't blow it in the next 10 days, which he could, his message should be, she's corrupt, and if you elect her, there's a chance she may be indicted while she's the president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the situation is fluid. It's fluid. Comey made a huge mistake by not calling the grand jury, because the grand jury folks, regular Americans, would have then heard the evidence that Comey himself decided wasn't enough to indict because she didn't mean it. Now, let's get on to what was found today. Uma Abedin is one of Hillary's best friends. So you've got to know that they were emailing all the time, all the time. She had three servers and she had one server and Wiener had three. You got to figure that Abedin passed some of Hillary's stuff on to her husband, Wiener. All right? That's why Wiener is involved. So the FBI goes in to investigate Wiener on this 15-year-old girl thing, and they see stuff from Uma Abedin coming to Wiener about Hillary Clinton. You have to assume this. This is an assumption I'm making. And then they go back and they look at Abedin's phone, and they see unbelievable amounts of emails from Clinton to Uma. Now, if you're the FBI, and this is all benign, has nothing to do with national security or top secret, you don't do anything. If it's just, what are you doing tonight, what kind of dress you're going to wear, or look at this, Anthony, Hillary Clinton has a good idea to do X, Y, and Z, that's not going to rise. So you know there's something in there. Yeah. Has to be.
Yeah.
Because Comey would never put his butt on the line. Now, here's the kicker. I talked to a very, very influential FBI guy the other day, and he said there's almost a mutiny within the FBI over James Comey's behavior in this investigation. He says that so many agents are angry that Comey knows he's lost all credibility within the agency, and that if he didn't put this out, that they were going to go public with it, and that Comey's career would have been done. He had to put it out. Now, that's not saying that she's going to be charged. I'm not saying any of that. What I am saying is that the FBI rank and file do not like the way James Comey conducted this investigation, do not feel it rose to the FBI standards, and this new stuff is enough to reopen the investigation, which is devastating with the Clinton
campaign. Devastating. First, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd like to, you to weigh in politically, forget legally for a second, but politically, scale of 1 to 10, you got to push it up towards the 8, 9, 10 area, especially with just 11 days left to go before the election.
It's hard to say because the candidates are so polarizing. But I do, as I said in the beginning, I think it's going to suppress turnout for Hillary Clinton. People are just going, you know, I've had enough. I don't want to vote for Trump, but I'm not going to go vote for her. And she needs a big turnout in states like Pennsylvania and New Hampshire. The other thing is that, politically speaking, Trump now can run with this for 10 days and raise the specter of absolute chaos if Hillary Clinton's elected and the FBI then finally does convene a grand jury, because it's reopened now. They can do that now, and the pressure is going to build on them. And the final thing is the far left is going crazy. They're going nuts. They're accusing Comey of all kinds of things. Comey was their best friend up until 3 hours ago. Now he's the devil.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing this unbelievably visceral reaction. I must say that Hillary Clinton was smart today in what she did. That was a smart play. Hey, get it out there, because she knows the FBI is not going to get it out there.
This is a very interesting point you make, that she did go to the podium. She said, first of all, she said that the emails, oh, they're factored in already. A lot of people on the right would disagree with that. But it's very interesting that both Hillary Clinton and Podesta today have said, get these emails out. We'll let the American public know. But so is Pence.
That's a smart play.
Because they know
they're not going to get them out.
But one of them is going to lose in that.
Right.
One of them is going to be a loser in that. If they bring it out now, someone's going to lose. Who loses?
Well, they can. They can. If you're an FBI, if you're an investigative agency, you have to compare those emails to other things that she said, Hillary Clinton has said. You've got to do a whole bunch of things before you arrive at any conclusion. You can't just throw them out there. That's trial by media. But Hillary Clinton now, you know, what can they do? They're going to have to say, look, we didn't do anything and we want this all out, hoping that they can go up to Election Day and people will buy that. And I'm not saying whether it's true or not. I'm not. I'm just saying that right now Trump has the advantage if the Trump campaign then zeroes in on corruption in the next 10 days.
You know, it very interesting you say that, because we have...
What's coming next are Carl Bernstein's comments about this breaking email scandal that Director Comey has unleashed.
Bernstein is on the phone with me. And Carl, we have been talking for months and months and months about this election. You wrote the definitive book on the Clintons, on Hillary Clinton. You've been saying that this is the drip, drip, drip that could ultimately haunt her.
Well, there's no question that the emails have always been the greatest threat to her candidacy for president, that her conduct in regard to the emails is really indefensible. And if there was going to be more information that came out, it is the one thing, as I said on the air last night, actually, that could really perhaps affect this election. We don't know what this means yet, except that it's a real bombshell. And that it is unthinkable that the director of the FBI would take this action lightly, that he would put this letter forth to the Congress of the United States saying that there is more information out there about classified emails and call it to the attention of the Congress, unless it was something requiring serious investigation. So that's where we are. Is it a certainty that we won't learn before the election? I'm not sure it's a certainty that we won't learn before the election. One thing is, it's possible, I suppose, that Hillary Clinton might want to, on her own initiative, talk to the FBI and find out what she can, and if she chooses to, let the American people know what she thinks or knows is going on, because obviously people are going to need to hear from her.
Carl, I mean, I'm sitting here in Florida, and I am reminded that early voting has sort of long since begun here. And this will be, for folks who are paying close attention to this campaign, for folks who are either undecided or not, this will be a big early voting weekend here in Florida. What should Hillary Clinton say to address this for voters in these key swing states?
I think if she has information available to her from the FBI or any other source as to her knowledge of what these emails might be, hopefully she will let us know what they are and what is under discussion here. Right now we're all talking in a vacuum. But I want to add here that in the last 36, 48 hours, there has been an undercurrent of kind of speculative discussion among some national security people that something might surface in the next few days about emails. And I think the expectation in this chatter, and I took it as just chatter, but informed chatter to some extent, was that it would relate to another round of WikiLeaks emails, which our Justice Department people seem to be saying is not the case. But there has been some noise in the national security community the last day or two of this kind of possibility of some kind of revelation. But this is
okay.
Her Achilles heel, and we got remember that it also comes on the, back to the word heel, of the revelations about the Clinton Foundation. So the confluence of all of this obviously is bad for her as it stands now, but with some knowledge she might be able to stop, turn things around, and give us some idea of what's going on in a way that we might not otherwise know. And also, it's very possible that some members of Congress very quickly are going to get an idea of what these emails are and what this is about, and also, for whatever purpose,
right,
put some information out there.
We will see, because thus far, we don't know.
Well, I tell you, this is getting pretty dicey. This is George Butler back, and we've got Hillary Clinton and her response to this latest scandal on her emails, which have been reopened, evidently, by Director Comey. But, boy, she's raising hell about it. You know, they're very upset about this because some opinions are that it could put a damper on her very low enthusiastic supporters anyway. But anyway, here's Hillary Clinton coming up. And then I'm going to follow that by Loretta Lynch's response as reported by CBS. There's an excellent clip coming up after this. So listen very carefully. Coming up is Hillary Clinton's response to this email scandal and her official position, which is basically put it out there. If you're going to put something against me or be talk, she wants to see the goods and put it on the table then. And, of course, Comey is of the position that nothing like this can be done that quickly, and for sure not before the election. So it's going to be an unknown between now and the election, and sometime after the election we might have the FBI reporting back something about more definitive and more detailed information about what's going on here. So that's where we're at right now. But anyway, this is Hillary Clinton coming up with her explanation and her rebuttal and her position for her campaign and her campaign itself.
I have now seen Director Comey's letter to Congress. We are 11 days out from perhaps the most important national election of our lifetimes. Voting is already underway in our country. So the American people deserve to get the full and complete facts immediately. The director himself has said he doesn't know whether the emails referenced in his letter are significant or not. I'm confident whatever they are will not change the conclusion reached in July. Therefore, it's imperative that the Bureau explain this issue in question, whatever it is, without any delay. So I look forward to moving forward to focus on the important challenges facing the American people, winning on November 8th, and working with all Americans to build a better future for our country. We have not been contacted by anyone. First we knew about it is, I assume, when you knew about it, when this letter sent to Republican members of the House was released. So we don't know the facts, which is why we are calling on the FBI to release all the information that it has. Even Director Comey noted that this new information may not be significant, so let's get it out. I think people a long time ago made up their minds about the emails. I think that's factored in to what people think, and now they're choosing a president. So I would urge everybody to get out and vote early in all the states that have early voting, because I think Americans want a president who can lead our country, who can get the economy working for everyone, not just those at the top, and who can bring our country together. I offer that. I can do that. And I'm very confident that the American people know that. And we're going to continue to discuss what's at stake in this election, because I believe that it's one of the most consequential elections ever. We've heard these rumors. We don't know what to believe. And I'm sure there will be even more rumors. That's why it is incumbent upon the FBI to tell us what they're talking about, Jeff, because right now your guess is as good as mine, and I don't think that's good enough. So we've made it very clear that if they're going to be sending this kind of letter that is only going originally to Republican members of the House, that they need to share whatever facts they claim to have with the American people. And that's what I expect to happen.
That was Hillary Clinton responding to these latest allegations and so forth, or this latest reopening of the original Hillary Clinton email scandal again by Hillary Clinton. That was her comments. Well, coming up would be Loretta Lynch's, the U.S. Attorney General, as interviewed, and actually a report was compiled by CBS reporter, and we're going to be playing that. And then right at the end here, we're going to play out some of Pat Buchanan. We're going to go back to the past of a speech that he gave out in at the Republican convention, and what he had to say about the culture wars. And that's going to probably pretty well conclude this first hour. But thank you for listening, and appreciate your support.
All right, turning back now to the Hillary Clinton email investigation. The case has had some unprecedented twist and turn, including the press conference FBI Director James Comey gave back in July when he recommended against filing charges. Remember this?
Though we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system, but their presence is especially concerning because all of these emails were housed on unclassified personal servers, not even supported by full-time security staff. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
All right, CBS News Justice reported. My friend Paula Reed has been looking into the legal ramifications of this case. Always good to see you, Paula. You've learned that Attorney General Loretta Lynch disagreed with Director Comey's decision to alert Congress about these new emails. What have you learned?
We have to remember that Attorney General Loretta Lynch is the FBI director's boss. And she said when she found out that he was going to send this letter updating his previous testimony that the Hillary Clinton email investigation had been closed, telling them that that's actually not the case, new emails have been found and will need to be evaluated, she advised him against doing that. Now, sources say they did not have a one-on-one conversation, but her position was made clear to the FBI director that she wanted him to behave in a manner that was consistent with the Department of Justice policy not to comment on ongoing investigations, and especially not to do so close to an election.
So, Paul, if the FBI doesn't know yet what these emails contain, why bring it to Congress now?
It is believed that FBI Director Comey wanted to be as transparent as possible in this investigation. Now, we're in uncharted territory here. There's never been a case like this. Usually the FBI does not come out and offer an explanation why they don't charge someone or updates on an investigation, and intelligent minds can disagree about whether or not the FBI director has taken appropriate steps by trying to be so transparent. Here, he believed he was amending or updating his previous testimony where he told Congress that this matter was completed, no charges would be brought, and it was essentially closed. So he felt obligated, though, to amend that now that these new emails have been discovered, even though he cannot say at this time whether or not they're significant.
So with that said, explain why this email investigation has been so unusual.
There's never been a case like this. When this first broke, when we first learned that they were investigating this private email server setup, we looked for precedent. That's what lawyers do. That's what journalists do. We're looking for comparable cases. And DeMarco, there is no comparable case. There's just no precedent for something like this, a Secretary of State having a private email setup. And so when FBI Director Comey had to sort of wrap this up, we thought, phase one, wrapping this up back in July, he took this unprecedented step. He came out and had a press conference. Now, he didn't take questions. He gave a statement, but I was there, and he explained why he was not bringing charges. They don't do that, DeMarco. They either file charges or they don't. He took more unusual steps. He went before Congress, and he was very critical of Secretary Clinton. Again, she wasn't charged. It was the FBI director criticizing someone who wasn't charged. He went even further. They released evidence, more information that they had collected during this investigation, not something the FBI does. And then here again, they're sending a letter to update testimony about the investigation where no charges were brought to Congress. Unprecedented steps in a very unusual case. And as I said before, intelligent minds can disagree about whether or not this transparency really serves the FBI, or whether history will see that in an effort to try to be transparent, he was actually unfair to the subject of this investigation.
All right. The newly discovered emails were found in a laptop belonging to Anthony Weiner and Huma Abedin. Explain how Clinton's private server is connected to this.
DeMarco, it's important to remember that the criminal investigation wasn't into Hillary Clinton specifically. It was into her email setup itself and anyone who used it. And that includes Huma Abedin, who had an email address that was connected to this server. Now, apparently, the FBI has found this device, received this device as part of its investigation into whether Anthony Weiner was sexting with an underage person. And they confiscated several devices, one of which, we were told, had thousands of emails related to this investigation. Reading between the lines, it would appear that some of these emails either were sent through the server or sent from that email address connected to the server. I know it's confusing, but the big question here is whether or not these emails are copies of something the FBI already has. We don't know. The worst case scenario is that if any of these emails actually contain classified information and were found on a device that not only belonged to Huma that was in her home, but also belonged to her estranged husband, Anthony Weiner, that is a problem, certainly politically, but also legally.
Big problem going forward.
That's the end of our report today, this weekend, on this latest breaking scandal on the Clinton email scandal. But what's coming up next is a speech that Pat Buchanan gave at the GOP convention, the national convention, in 1992, and it's called the Culture War speech. Anyway, listen closely to this and see what you think about it. We're in a culture war, all right, and it's not going that well for the conservative side of it. So anyway, listen very carefully, and then this will take us to the end of the program. I'll make some very closing comments right at the very, very end. So listen closely, and thank you for listening. God bless each and every one of you.
What a terrific crowd. This may even be larger than the crowd I had in Ellijay, Georgia. Don't laugh. We carried Ellijay. Listen, my friends. We may have taken the long way home, but we finally got here to Houston. The first thing I want to do tonight is to congratulate President George Bush and to remove any doubt about where we stand. The primaries are over, the heart is strong again, and the Buchanan Brigades are enlisted all the way to a great Republican comeback victory in November. Like many of you, Like many of you, last month I watched that giant masquerade ball up at Madison Square Garden, where 20,000 liberals and radicals came dressed up as moderates and centrists in the greatest single exhibition of cross-dressing in American political history. You know, one by one, the prophets of doom appeared at the podium. The Reagan decade, they moaned, was a terrible time in America, and they said the only way to prevent worse times is to turn our country's fate and our country's future over to the party that gave us McGovern, Mondale, Carter, and Michael Dukakis. Where do they find these leaders? No way, my friends. The American people are not going to go back to the discredited liberalism of the 1960s and the failed liberalism of the 1970s, no matter how slick the package in 1992. The malcontents of Madison Square Garden notwithstanding, the 1980s were not terrible years in America. They were great years. You know it, and I know it, and everyone knows it except for the carping critics who sat on the sidelines of history, jeering at one of the great statesmen of modern time, Ronald Reagan. Remember that time? Out of Jimmy Carter's days of malaise, Ronald Reagan crafted the greatest peacetime economic recovery in history. 3 million new businesses and 20 million new jobs. Under the Reagan doctrine, one by one, it was the communist dominoes that began to fall. First, Grenada was liberated by U.S. airborne troops and the U.S. Marine Corps. Then the mighty Red Army was driven out of Afghanistan with American weapons. And then in Nicaragua, that squalid Marxist regime was forced to hold free elections by Ronald Reagan's Contra Army, and the communists were thrown out of power. Fellow Americans, we ought to remember, it was under our party that the Berlin Wall came down and Europe was reunited. It was under our party that the Soviet Empire collapsed and the captive nations broke free. You know, it is said that every American president will be remembered in history with but a single sentence. George Washington was the father of his country. Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves and saved the Union. And Ronald Reagan won the Cold War. And it is time. And it is just about time, that my old colleagues, the columnists and commentators, looking down on us tonight from their skyboxes and anchor booths, gave Ronald Reagan the full credit he deserves for leading America to victory in the Cold War. friends. Most of all, Ronald Reagan made us proud to be Americans again. We never felt better about our country, and we never stood taller in the eyes of the world than when the Gipper was at the helm. But we are here tonight, my friends, not only to celebrate, but to nominate. And an American president has many roles. He is our first diplomat, the architect of American foreign policy. And which of these two men is more qualified for that great role? George Bush has been UN ambassador, director of the CIA, envoy to China. As vice president, George Bush co-authored and co-signed the policies that won the Cold War. As president, George Bush presided over the liberation of Eastern Europe and the termination of the Warsaw Pact. And what about Mr. Clinton? Well, Bill Clinton couldn't find 150 words to discuss foreign policy in an acceptance speech that lasted almost an hour. You know, as was said of another Democratic candidate, Bill Clinton's foreign policy experience is pretty much confined to having had breakfast once at the International House of Pancakes. Look at the record and recall what happened. Under President George Bush, more human beings escaped from the prison house of tyranny to freedom than in any other four-year period in history. And for any man, let me tell you, for any man, to call this a record of failure is the cheap political rhetoric of politicians who only know how to build themselves up by tearing America down. And we don't want that kind of leadership in the United States. Presidency is also an office that Theodore Roosevelt called America's bully pulpit. Harry Truman said it was preeminently a place of moral leadership. George Bush is a defender of right to life and a champion of the Judeo-Christian values and beliefs upon which America was founded. Mr. Clinton, however, has a different agenda. At its top is unrestricted abortion on demand. When the Irish Catholic governor of Pennsylvania, Robert Casey, asked to say a few words on behalf of the 25 million unborn children destroyed since Roe v. Wade, Bob Casey was told there was no room for him at the podium at Bill Clinton's convention, and no room at the inn. Yet a militant leader of the homosexual rights movement could rise at that same convention and say, Bill Clinton and Al Gore represent the most pro-lesbian and pro-gay ticket in history, and so they do. Bill Clinton says he supports school choice, but only for state-run schools. Parents who send their children to Christian schools or private schools or Jewish schools or Catholic schools need not apply. Elect me, and you get two for the price of one, Mr. Clinton says, of his lawyer spouse. And what? And what does Hillary believe? Well, Hillary believes that 12-year-olds should have the right to sue their parents. And Hillary has compared marriage and the family as institutions to slavery and life on an Indian reservation. Well, speak for yourself, Hillary. This, my friends, this is radical feminism, the agenda that Clinton and Clinton would impose on America. Abortion on demand, a litmus test for the Supreme Court, homosexual rights, discrimination against religious schools, women in combat units. That's change, all right. But that's not the kind of change America needs. It's not the kind of change America wants. And it's not the kind of change we can abide in a nation we still call God's country. The President of the United States is also America's Commander-in-Chief. He's the man we authorize to send fathers and sons and brothers and friends into battle. George Bush was 17 years old when they bombed Pearl Harbor. He left his high school graduation. He walked down to the recruiting office, and he signed up to become the youngest fighter pilot in the Pacific War. And Mr. Clinton, and Bill Clinton, I'll tell you where he was. I'll tell you where he was. When Bill Clinton's time came in Vietnam, he sat up in a dormitory room in Oxford, England, and figured out how to dodge the draft. Let me ask the question to this convention. Which of these two men has won the moral authority to send young Americans into battle? I suggest respectfully, it is the American patriot and war hero, Navy Lieutenant J.G. George Herbert Walker Bush. My fellow Americans, this campaign is about philosophy, and it is about character. And George Bush wins hands down on both counts. And it is time all of us came home and stood beside him. As his running mate, Mr. Clinton chose Albert Gore. But just how moderate is Prince Albert? Well, according to the National Taxpayers Union, Al Gore beat out Teddy Kennedy two straight years for the title of biggest spender in the U.S. Senate, and Teddy Kennedy isn't moderate about anything. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding about Teddy. How many other 60-year-olds do you know who still go to Florida for spring break? Costume party they held up in New York, Mr. Gore made a startling declaration. Henceforth, Albert Gore said, the central organizing principle of governments everywhere must be the environment. Wrong, Albert. The central organizing principle of this republic is freedom. From the ancient forests of Oregon and Washington to the Inland Empire of California, America's great middle class has got to start standing up to these environmental extremists who put birds and rats and insects ahead of families, workers, and jobs. One year ago, I could not have dreamt I would be here tonight. I was just one of many panelists on what President Bush calls those crazy Sunday talk shows. But I disagreed with the president, and so we challenged the president in the Republican primaries. And we fought as best we could. From February to June, President Bush won 33 of those primaries. I can't recall exactly how many we won. I'll get you the figure tomorrow. But tonight I do want to speak from the heart to the 3 million people who voted for Pat Buchanan for president. I will never forget you or the honor you have done me. But I do believe, deep in my heart, that the right place for us to be now in this presidential campaign is right beside George Bush. This party is my home, this party is our home, and we've got to come home to it. And don't let anyone tell you different. Yes, we disagreed with President Bush, but we stand with him for the freedom to choose religious schools. And we stand with him against the amoral idea that gay and lesbian couples should have the same standing in law as married men and women. We stand with President Bush. We stand with President Bush for right to life and for voluntary prayer in the public schools. And we stand against putting our wives and daughters and sisters into combat units of the United States Army. And we stand, my friends, we also stand with President Bush in favor of the right of small towns and communities to control the raw sewage of pornography that so terribly pollutes our popular culture. We stand with President Bush in favor of federal judges who interpret the law as written and against would-be Supreme Court justices like Mario Cuomo, who think they have a mandate to rewrite the Constitution. Friends, this election is about more than who gets what. It is about who we are. It is about what we believe and what we stand for as Americans. There is a religious war going on in this country. It is a cultural war as critical to the kind of nation we shall be as the Cold War itself. For this war is for the soul of America. And in that struggle for the soul of America, Clinton and Clinton are on the other side, and George Bush is on our side. And so to the Buchanan brigades out there, we have to come home and stand beside George Bush. In these 6 months of campaigning from Concord, New Hampshire to California, I came to know our country better than I have known it ever before in my life. And I gathered up memories that are going to be with me the rest of my days. It was that day-long ride through the great state of Georgia in a bus Vice President Bush himself had used in 1988, called Asphalt One. The ride ended in a 9 p.m. speech in a tiny town in southern Georgia called Fitzgerald. There were those workers at the James River paper mill in northern New Hampshire in a town called Groveton. Tough, hardy men. None of them would say a word to me as I came down the line, shaking their hands one by one. They were under threat of losing their jobs at Christmas. As I moved down the line, one tough fellow about my age just looked up and said to me, "Save our jobs." Then there was the legal secretary that I met at the Manchester airport on Christmas Day, who came running up to me and said, "Mr. Buchanan, I'm going to vote for you." And then she broke down weeping, and she said, "I've lost my job, I don't have any money, and they're going to take away my little girl. What am I going to do?" My friends, these people are our people. They don't read Adam Smith or Edmund Burke, but they come from the same schoolyards and the same playgrounds and towns as we came from. They share our beliefs and our convictions, our hopes and our dreams. These are the conservatives of the heart. They are our people, and we need to reconnect with them. We need to let them know we know how bad they're hurting. They don't expect miracles of us, but they need to know we care. They were the people, my friends. They were the people of Hayfork, a tiny town up in California's Trinity Alps,
a town that is now under a sentence of death because a federal judge has set aside 9 million acres for the habitat of the spotted owl, forgetting about the habitat of the men and women who live and work in Hayfork. And there were the brave people, and there were the brave people of Koreatown who took the worst of those L.A. riots, but still live the family values we treasure, and who still deeply believe in the American dream. Friends, in these wonderful 25 weeks of our campaign, the saddest days were the days of that riot in L.A., worst riot in American history. But out of that awful tragedy can come a message of hope. Hours after that riot ended, I went down to the Army compound in South Los Angeles, where I met the troopers of the 18th Cavalry who had come to save the city of Los Angeles. An officer of the 18th Cav said, "Mr. Buchanan, I want you to talk to a couple of our troopers." And I went over and I met these young fellas. They couldn't have been 20 years old. And they recounted their story. They had come in to Los Angeles late in the evening of the second day. And the rioting was still going on. And two of them walked up a dark street where the mob had burned and looted every single building on the block but one, a convalescent home for the aged. And the mob was headed in to ransack and loot the apartments of the terrified old men and women inside. The troopers came up the street, M16s at the ready, and the mob threatened and cursed. But the mob retreated because it had met the one thing that could stop it: force rooted in justice and backed by moral courage. You know, greater love than this hath no man than that he lay down his life for his friend. Here were 19-year-old boys ready to lay down their lives to stop a mob from molesting old people they did not even know. And as those boys took back the streets of Los Angeles, block by block, my friends, we must take back our cities and take back our culture and take back our country. God bless you and God bless America.
That's the end of our program this evening. But I put that clip in there of the Culture War speech that Pat Buchanan gave back in 1992 at the National GOP Convention. And I put it in there because we need some semblance and some foundation of our past through history and so forth. And there has been culture wars underway. If you look on thesecrettruth.com and come in, I'm going to put some click-offs and some hypertext links up that will relate back to articles and also books that have written about. One of them is entitled The Culture Wars. So look at that and try to get a little bit of a better perspective out of what's going on in this world. We are under attack by some very dark forces, and we need to wake up, come out of that delusional state. Thank you for listening. Good night.